She reduces, reuses, and recycles. She talks the talk and walks the walk. She doesn't tell you what to think. She just wants you to. She's Mrs. Green. And this is Mrs. Green's World on the Mrs. Green's World Radio Network. And now, Mrs. Green.
Welcome, everybody. You are indeed listening to the Mrs. Green's World Radio Network, where we don't tell you what to think. We just want you to. And we're going to have a lot of fun today helping you think. It's going to be a great show again. Our show today was made possible due to the generous support of the Fairfax Companies, true leaders in sustainability. And as always, we thank them for their generous support. Amazing and exciting show and show guest today. Our topic, Mission Food Recovery. Our guest is Ben Simon. He is the co-founder and executive director of the Food Recovery Network, an organization which was founded in January of 2012 with a mission to create food recovery programs on every college campus in the country. So started with a big mission, Ben has already been recognized by ABC News and Univision as one of their top 10 social entrepreneurs of 2012. All I can say to that is, yikes. Ben is here to share with us how all of it got started, where they are in terms of fulfilling their very big mission, and I hope what we can expect to see happen as a result of their efforts in 2015 and beyond. Welcome, Ben Simon, and thanks for being here.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm excited to be here.
I think it's going to be a really exciting show, and I love to talk about food. Who doesn't? Food waste, food scarcity, food insecurity. And I think you have a really compelling story that covers a lot of that. So why don't we start in the beginning? I say that almost every show. How did the Food Recovery Network get started, and what inspired you to do it?
Yeah, absolutely. So my fellow co-founders and I were students at the University of Maryland and a few other universities, and we basically noticed that good food was going to waste from our campus dining halls, and we had been involved in fighting hunger locally in the community, doing canned food drives, raising awareness. But when we saw that our dining hall was basically just throwing away all their surplus food at the end of the day, we kind of just snapped into action, and it was pretty much felt like a common sense idea. We just approached dining services and made it happen. And right off the bat, we were donating 100 to 200 pounds of food pretty much every night. From there, we just started calling other students who were our friends at different universities across the country and, started spreading the word through social media, ended up getting a good amount of press coverage, which helped to spread the story even further and reach more students. And today, just 3.5 years later, we're actually at 111 college campuses and have donated over 600,000 pounds of food.
It blows me away. I mean, it really blows me away. And you kind of, when I interview people like you, a bunch of us got together and we decided to do something and here's what we've done. There are lots of moving parts in there, lots of grassroots work that you had to do get such organic growth. So could you share a little bit about what kinds of things you had to do, systems in place and things that you could duplicate on other campuses? What kind of things did you have to start looking at? Because what you were basically doing was building a business.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And we often kind of look at ourselves as a franchise, except we don't charge any sort of license fee for it.
Wow.
But it's
That's
very
a
much
great
that
analogy.
Same. Yeah, yeah. And a lot of student movements kind of operate in the same way and have similar stories. But for us, we really, it's sort of, as the phrase goes, first you nail it, then you scale it.
And oh my God, I'm going to write that down. I love it. First you nail it, then you scale it. It's a great hashtag.
Awesome. And so we basically, just had to solidify our model before we felt comfortable approaching other colleges. But like I said, it was just so exciting how much food we were donating right off the bat. And it's a relatively simple program. You know, it's hard to oversimplify it. It's pretty much we're taking, you know, surplus food. We go back there in the dining hall towards closing time, meet the chefs, get their surplus food that they otherwise would have just wasted that day, package it up in the containers. It takes about 20 minutes to package it up and maybe another 20 minutes to drive it down to local partner agency where they have refrigeration and they reheat it for a meal. So I think just the simple fact that it's a direct service program where operationally it's pretty simple, at least the core model, made it easy for us. But there's still, you know, a number of challenges. And I was actually just recently going back over some of our first email chains when we were first uniting with some of our co-founders. And we were really lucky to have a large base of 8 amazing co-founders at University of Maryland, but also we teamed up with students at Brown University, UC Berkeley, and Pomona College.
And were those through personal friendships that you all had, the founders?
You know, it was really a combination. You know, it started first with us students at University of Maryland, and I had already known the co-founders before getting involved.
Right.
We were actually fighting hunger in a different student organization. And I had made a contact at Brown University from a student who was taking a gap year, and he looped in 2 other co-founders at Brown, and then just randomly reconnected with the students at Pomona and UC Berkeley. So it kind of was a mix and match, but it all came together.
And starts the ball rolling. I mean, there's a momentum there that had to be encouraging. So when you said challenges, how were the chefs? Were they excited about it, or did they say, oh, yeah, we're fine, but make it easy, and how are you going to do that?
You know, it's always a mixed bag for us.
Okay.
We definitely, I think, most schools encounter some level of skepticism
right.
from the managers and chefs. You know, I think if you talk to the average dining manager and approach them about donating their surplus food, and same goes if you talk to a restaurant owner or a grocery store manager. Most of them will kind of look at you like you're crazy. And they'll say, you know, why would I do that? I'll get sued if something goes wrong.
Right.
But the reality is that there's a federal law called the Bill Emerson Good Samaritan Food Donation Act. It's kind of a mouthful. But
I loved that you included that in my show prep, because that is definitely a question I would have asked you. Aren't people going to say, well, we can't do that because if somebody gets sick, they'll sue us? And you're saying,
No,
that's fear and unfounded.
Absolutely, absolutely. But the misinformation is widespread. And to no one's fault, it's just...
It's like urban legend almost. That's what happens. Oh, I can't do that. Yeah,
it's a ghost, you know. It's just sort of this fear of a lawsuit. You know, people... We ask people, and they're like, oh, I can't do that. I heard of a friend who, you know, worked at a place that got sued because of food it donated.
But they never really did.
You can't find anything.
Yeah, check that on Snopes.
Yeah. And what's really interesting is that the University of Arkansas's Food Recovery Project recently put out a report looking into this kind of idea that somebody had been sued about this. And actually, what they found was that the Bill Emerson Act never even had to come into play, because there has never been a single instance of a lawsuit of somebody suing a food business that was donating their surplus food. So it's really, you know, no examples of this. There's not a lot of risk involved, but education is half the battle. And is really a core part of what we do at Food Recovery Network.
Yeah, and the sad part of
donors feel more comfortable.
The sad part of that is that it's based on urban legend and myth, and it's one of the things that in my role of Mrs. Green that I try to, like, let's dispel those myths and get on board with great programs like this, because it's truly over the top awesome. And I want to ask you this: when you guys started it, the 8 of you, you said 8. Co-founders, mm-hmm. dynamic human beings. Did you really think, I mean, you were in college, right? So did you think, here's what we're going to be doing, and that you're going to be managing what is now kind of a massive national effort? Did you see that in the vision? Did you have the, oh my gosh, this could be so big?
You know what? We half did. We half want, you know, really wanted this to happen from day one.
Right.
We had actually, several of my co-founders had been involved in a different student movement beforehand that had actually spread to a few campuses. So we're kind of familiar. And I myself actually, I was very active in a different student movement, an anti-genocide movement called STAND, about 5 or 6 years ago. So I was familiar kind of with this idea of, you know, nonprofits could be created by, you know, sort of coming out of this grassroots effort that happens organically of students having a good idea to change the world and it really catching fire. Students are in love with it and it sort of just spreads across the country and they make a big difference together. So I think pretty early on we kind of saw ourselves within that frame and said, you know, hey, this has been done by STAN, this has been done by other student organizations in the past, and, you know, maybe if we're fortunate enough to have students really feel passionate about this cause, then maybe this can happen for Food Recovery Network, too. And we were just amazed, though. That's the other half, is I don't think any of us thought that it was going to spread quite as quickly as it did.
Right. To go from what you did to 111 chapters in a really short time and wanting to reach 150, that really blows me away. Not just reach 150, but by the end of the spring semesters. And we're going to talk a little bit in the show about how people listening can help make that happen. But I want to ask you, let's go to some of the, like, the basics of food scarcity and hunger. I know that in our county alone, 1 in 3 children go to bed food deprived is what we call it. They're not necessarily starving to death, but they're definitely impacted by food scarcity and food insecurity. I think you have a more of a national level perspective. And what is it? And don't we have enough food in America to feed everybody?
Yeah, you know, it's so crazy because we do. America grows enough food to feed everybody.
And probably some other people. Yeah, right.
Yeah, globally speaking, too, you know, the world grows enough food to feed everybody. But it's such a shame because, you know, in America, although we grow enough food to feed everybody, 1 in 6 Americans, actually 50 million Americans, are food insecure. And what that means is that they're in danger of missing meals. They don't know where their next meal is coming from.
Right. It blows you away, doesn't it, in this United States? I mean, it kind of shocks me every time I hear it. And I know so much about food waste.
Yeah, it is just so crazy. And it makes the massive amount of food waste that's going on right now even crazier in light of the food insecurity that's taking place at the same time. You know, we can't even feed all of our neighbors, all of our, you know, fellow residents of the United States. And here we go, wasting actually 40% of all the food grown in America goes to waste.
And there's, you know, you can only intersect along some of those lines because it part of it is the food we throw away. And I understand that from restaurants, from taking too much on our plates, from cooking too much at home. Are there any other food suppliers that you have connected with that you help with reduction of food waste besides restaurants on campus?
So we work with restaurants on campus. We also work with the dining halls on campus, which are usually run by the university or contracted out.
Huge industry. Huge industry.
Yeah. And we do the catered events on campus as well as sometimes the football and basketball stadiums for larger state schools like University of Maryland.
Wow.
But we've really noticed that the problem extends much, much further than just colleges and universities. And we're really excited that with Food Recovery Network and together in partnership with Campus Kitchens Project, which is another great organization and a national partner of ours, together working on college campuses, we're on track currently to actually make higher education the first sector where food recovery is the norm rather than the exception. which is amazing.
It is amazing. It's like I always want to ring the bell on this show. I used to be on terrestrial radio, and a person rang the bell, and it's like I just want to ring the bell when things like that happen. It perks
That's
up
great.
The show, and it's like, wow, where's my bell?
Yeah, we keep a gong in our office every time we get a new chapter. We were ringing the gong this morning, actually. Duke University just became a chapter.
Who did?
Duke University.
Duke. Oh, my gosh. Duke on board. Okay, so here, see, I can ring it.
There you go.
It just, I mean, those kinds of things just make people smile and get you really interested in what the big picture is. I mean, that's exciting to get Duke. Oh, my gosh. Really
big. Definitely.
Really, really, really big.
A little bit less exciting for me because I'm a Terp, and we have a little bit of a rivalry, but... Still excited for our Duke chapter.
God. That's perfect because I can tell you in Arizona, you're either a Wildcat or a Sun Devil, and never the twain shall meet. And I am a Wildcat, so I totally get it. Oh my gosh, that's hysterical. I'm really glad you brought that up. But they are on board, and you know, we love all of God's children. That's the line that I end up going back to. Okay, so that's all right. Now back to food waste. I'd like to talk a little bit about the people that are on the receiving end of your great, efforts, and how do you select them? Because that has to be tough too. That's another piece that you have to put in to the franchise model. How do you select partners?
So Food Recovery Network, again, operates kind of like a franchise. So one of the resources that we provide for each of our chapters in the movement is guidelines on what makes a good partner agency is the term we use, you know, local agencies fighting hunger in the community. And some of the guidelines that are on that resource is, you know, close proximity to the college campus, having adequate refrigeration and capacity to reheat the food
to
165. As well as just basic knowledge of food safety, you know, responsiveness, professionalism, being a 501c3 nonprofit, different things like that. So I guess the result is, you know, we end up partnering with a wide variety of organizations. We're working with after-school programs that feed children. We're working with an organization that focuses specifically on veterans, and a lot of our organizations also have a focus on veterans, transitional homes, soup kitchens, senior centers.
Yeah, shelters. I mean, there's so much need. It just blows me away. And after-school programs is a good one because I know I have a pretty good frame of reference. I'm sure you're familiar with Danny Nierenberg's organization, Food Tank, the Food Tank Thank?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm actually speaking at the conference tomorrow.
Oh my gosh, you have no idea. I so wanted to go. My schedule wouldn't allow it. I got a media pass and everything. So there's I don't want to ring the bell. I want to ring the sound of silence because I'm not going to get to be there. But that's amazing. And look what she did. I want to just tell you that when I started Mrs. Green's World, we were, I went to a thing with her in New York, and it was 2,000, she had like 9,000 followers on Facebook. And when we, today I think she has 223,000 on Facebook alone, and I've had her on the show several times. I mean, wow. It's a big wow, and I'll be watching you too. I'm so
amazing.
Excited that you're going to be there. The whole organization is amazing, and she built it largely on the volunteers. I mean, she really did. So believe it or not, we're going to have to take a quick break. I want everybody to stay here with us, and I'm sure they want to also. Our guest is Ben Simon. He is the co-founder and executive director of the Food Recovery Network, an organization which was founded in January of 2012 with a mission to create food recovery programs on every college campus in the country. And lo and behold, they're getting close to that. Today was a ring the gong day. They just signed Duke a bitter rival of Ben's. I so get it. 50 more students are, they are looking to get 50 more students to apply to start chapters and move from 111 to 150. Everybody stay here with me. There are lots, tongue tied. I'm thinking about that Duke thing. Lots more great info to follow. Stay here with me. We'll be right back. Hi there, this is Mrs. Green with some pretty impressive news about the VW Jetta TDI. It's got a turbocharged clean diesel engine, it's 90% cleaner than previous diesel engines, it gets 609 miles on one tank of gas, more than the Prius. That's from Tucson, Arizona to San Diego and halfway back. And it's got an amazing 6-speed Tiptronic transmission. See Chapman VW today for a very special offer on the 2014 Jetta TDI or visit ChapmanTucson.com.
For almost 40 years, Bookman's Entertainment Exchange has been the place for used books, music, movies, and video games in Arizona. From the latest bestsellers to out-of-print classics, we have you covered with 3 Tucson locations. And now you can buy, sell, and trade musical instruments. Our newly expanded sections are chock-full of top-notch instruments. From beginners to seasoned musicians, we've got something for you. Open 7 days a week, shop, hang out, and enjoy our free Wi-Fi. Bookman's, good for your pocket, good for the planet.
Ready to clean out that garage? Goodwill offers you 40 convenient locations all over southern Arizona. And at every one, you'll be greeted by a uniformed Goodwill employee trained to assist you in unloading your items, prepared to offer you a receipt for your tax-deductible donation, and grateful for something you won't get anywhere else.
Thank you. Because of your donation, I have a job.
The gift of Goodwill. For a list of Goodwill donation sites, go to goodwillsouthernaz.org.
Welcome back, everybody. You're listening to the Mrs. Green's World Radio Network, where we don't tell you what to think. We just want you to. And today we're asking you to think about food waste. Great show, great guest. But let me do just a quick shout out to you to invite you to become a sustaining member of Mrs. Green's World, because preservation of the planet is not an option. It's a necessity. Your support will help to keep our broadcasts free and independent, and to continue to bring you informative shows like this one, which I think you love every bit as much as I do, that address issues that impact all of our lives. It's in our neighborhood. It's our next door neighbors. So the work that Ben is doing is important work, and I love being a part to spread it. So please visit our website at Mrs. Green's World. Click on the Preserve the Planet icon in the upper right-hand corner. And I want to tell you there's a membership level for every budget. We have student memberships, gift memberships. And if you have a love of Mrs. Green's World and what we're doing, please consider being a member. And also remember, I love saying we have a great app. There's one of my favorite lines on the show is there's an app for that. Well, there's an app for listening to our podcast. It's called Igloo Radio. Again, on the homepage, free. And we hope that you'll download it to one of your gizmos, as we call them, your iGizmo. People are loving it, and it's really helped to expand our reach. So take a minute, put it on your phone or iPad, and start listening to these great shows. I'd like to welcome back our guest, Ben Simon. He's co-founder and executive director of the Food Recovery Network, an organization that started in January of 2012 with a very clear mission: create food recovery programs on every college campus in the country, not in the Southwest, not in the Northwest, not in their region, but everyone in the country. Very early on, Ben was recognized by ABC News and Univision as one of their top 10 social entrepreneurs of 2012. So it's catching on like wildfire. Is that fair to say, Ben? It's pretty awesome.
Oh, yeah. We're working with a lot of students right now, and yeah, we're just continuing to grow this movement.
And, you know, I just have to say this because the Super Bowl is in a week and a day, February 1st, Super Bowl 49. And one of our guests is Jack Groh, who's the head of the environmental programs for the NFL. I never had any idea how massive their conservation efforts are, including their food recovery. Can you imagine how much food waste there is at the Super Bowl?
Oh, yeah.
And they have to go into a city and they're setting up amazing things to happen to reduce their waste, you know, the solid waste management, all of the pieces, and doing what you're doing, partnering with local communities to make a big difference. I mean, it happens to be in Arizona this year, so we're excited about that. Okay.
Wow, that's great.
I know. It's really very cool. Anybody that's doing it, right, helps with the hunger problems. Is there any financial incentives for restaurants and other food businesses to get involved, or does it cost them money?
You know, that is a great question, because this is another one of those misconceptions that we were talking about. And I think that if this was cleared up, and if everyone was listening to Mrs. Green's radio right now, this would make a huge difference, because everybody needs to hear this.
From your mouth to God's ear. It's like,
Everybody, you know, get your friends, get them to huddle around the radio right now. Because, you know, there's a really strong business case for food recovery. And I think one of the issues with why it hasn't spread quite so fast, although it is really growing, the amount of businesses that are participating in food recovery, is that often they do, just like you were suggesting in your question, they do feel like it's maybe something that's going to cost them. Maybe it's this extra risk. And small business owners in particular are already so busy with everything else that they're doing, trying to run their restaurant or grocery store, that it just feels like one extra thing, and they don't see any return on their investment. But in actuality, food recovery not only helps the community and helps the environment, but it also helps their bottom line. They can take advantage of an enhanced tax deduction, up to double the normal cost of goods sold. They also can reduce waste hauling fees, which can be really substantial if, you know, for some larger places that do more volume, like grocery stores. And finally, pretty much across the board, we see that food donors, when they start participating and donating their surplus food, they become more conscious of that surplus, of the food that they had previously been wasting.
Right.
And they start to track it, and it starts to matter. And when it starts to matter, it starts to reduce over time, because that's an extra cost for them when they're generating more food than they serve the customers. And so with Food Recovery Network, we have seen across the board at all of our 111 chapters that they reduce their donations over time. They're cutting costs by reducing food waste at the source, which is great for them, it's great for the environment, and something we definitely encourage. So businesses can save a lot of money by participating in food recovery.
But what a great attitude on your part. I mean, that's something you want. You'd actually rather them get less food, because then there's less waste. I mean, it's really, that's very, to me, a very selfless attitude to take, I think.
Yeah, well, you know, in order to partner with businesses, I think we need to have the integrity to have their best interests in mind when we work with them. And, you know, we don't want them to generate extra food just so they can donate it if they want to, on their own accord, cook extra food for a donation. I think that's fantastic, but we don't want them to just be generating surplus on a regular basis. We want them to, you know, help their bottom line as much as possible, and while helping the environment at the same time.
And, you know, I want to morph a little bit into the business model, because it is a business model and there's nothing wrong with that. You are a nonprofit. People can donate. Do you have full-time staff now, since you have such a large scale number of schools that you have to help manage and support?
Yes. We do have a full-time staff. We transitioned about a year and a half ago from an entirely volunteer group of co-founders to a full-time paid staff. And so we actually have 12 full-time staff out of our office in College Park.
Oh, my goodness. I love it. Oh, my gosh. What a great model.
We have an amazing team. They're actually at work right now, working really hard, coaching students to start new chapters, and once the students have successfully started their chapters, giving the students the support that they need to continue to grow their capacity over time.
Talk about a bell ringer. I mean, and that to me is a sustainable model. I'm a big believer in, utilizing volunteers, but if you don't have the core staff that are paid to show up and make things happen every day, there are a lot of obstacles, in my opinion. All the more reason to support what you're doing. That's pretty amazing. I'm imagining that you have a lot of proud friends and family members around because, you know, you made a big dream come true. It's just press pause here for Mrs. Green to have a moment. It's pretty amazing, my friend. Okay.
Thank you. And yeah, we're really proud of our team.
I mean, it really is. So let's go to what kind of support services you do provide when there are startups. Do you go on site? Is it mostly by the phone? What are the kinds of things that you help coach other chapters around the country to do? And that was a very long question. You can take it one at a time. What kind of support do you provide to chapters?
So most of our work is over the phone and
okay.
over video chat, you know.
Right, all the modern ways you can talk now without traveling.
Exactly. You know, we even text message sometimes with our students. We develop a real close relationship with each of our students. And so, Food Recovery Network basically has two main departments. We have an expansion department and then a member support department.
Okay.
And our expansion team is 4 full-time staff, and they, you know, really, they're actually working with 80 student teams,
wow.
I should say, at different colleges all across the country.
Right.
And they have weekly check-in calls with each of these students as they coach them through all the challenges of starting a new chapter, like meeting with banning services, figuring out transportation, going over food safety together. And then once the chapters are officially started, that's when we sort of pass them off to member support, and the member support
okay.
team plays a really important role of, as I said before, continuing to help them increase their capacity, you know, open up new locations that they can donate food from, continue to grow their leadership skills, holding conferences for them so that they can learn and network and increase their commitment to the movement. So that's pretty much how we do our work.
And there's 8 on that team, on the member support team?
Yeah, there are actually 5, and then there's me in the organization. I have one co-founder who joined recently full-time to help on the fundraising side, and then we have 2 part-time staff who help out more with administrative and fundraising.
Yeah, and then there's the whole social media piece, which you have to keep going. It's like you have to keep a lot of plates in the air.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Lots of plates
really
spinning.
Vibrant social media community. I should actually give a shout out. You know, you can follow us, facebook.com/Food Recovery Network. We're on Twitter and Instagram as well, @Food Recovery. So check us out, follow us.
And we'll be tweeting and Facebooking and putting you on Pinterest and doing everything when this show comes out. We hope that you'll do the same so that more people listen. I love that you gave a shout out for us. I'm curious to ask, you know, you're doing this at the student level and really grassroots organic student involvement. Do you ever get pushback from the administration on college campuses, or has that been kind of an easy path and are they generally supportive?
The administration and the student affairs offices on college campuses are typically very supportive of what we're doing. In general, the colleges really embrace Food Recovery Network chapters starting on their college campuses. But student affairs offices and the administration in general, yeah, very supportive because they want to see their students grow as leaders. And they want to see kind of bridging that town-gown gap, so to speak, at college campuses and really getting connected to the local community, helping out the local community, and learning from the local community at the same time. And they also embrace it as a sustainability initiative, of course. So, yeah, we get a lot of love from the colleges. And several of them have actually made videos highlighting the Food Recovery Network chapters and used their college and university marketing departments to help generate press coverage about the local individual food recovery network chapters.
So that's pretty exciting. I mean, it really is that there aren't a lot of obstacles. And I know for things that I've worked with at the University of Arizona, the food service people are pretty awesome. And, you know, trying to put greener restaurants in and really have a much more sustainable attitude in general is what I have found. So I think that's really cool. What about,
Definitely.
I'd love you to tell us, I love stories. And one of the stories that I thought was compelling on the website, I'd like you to share with us. It's called Faithful on the Front Lines. I was sure it wouldn't be putting you on the spot, but it was an event just before Thanksgiving. And I think it gives us a sense of the kinds of things you're doing to make a difference in such kind of different and important ways. Can you share that story with us? Do you think it's a really cool story?
I'm sorry, Faithful on the Front Lines?
Faithful on the Front Lines.
I'm actually, could you refresh my memory? What you said that was on our Facebook page?
It was on your Facebook page, and it was a story about a letter writing. It all happened with letter writing, and maybe I did put you on the spot, but it was a great story about working with one community to write letters. It was a very different, and you know, it's funny because as an executive director with all the plates you have in the air, you can't know everything. I mean, people ask me things that my team does, and I'm like, I don't know about that. And it's really okay. So then why don't you just, I mean, I am really good. It's about fighting food waste. It's really on your, it's home front and center on your blog, but Faithful on the Front Lines, it's called. It was posted in January of 2015. And you were working with an international living learning community on the southwest end of Grand Rapids, which is where? So, Calvin College was the college. So I recovered and found.
Ah, yes.
Yay. Okay, yay. Should I ring the bell again?
Yes.
Oh my God. I should have checked it out before I asked you.
No, yes. Sorry. I'm embarrassed. It is actually an effort, by one of our chapters at Calvin College. I don't remember exactly what the effort was. But
well, here's what's cool about it and why I got excited. It was really a letter offering. And, you know, there were other organizations like Bread for the World, and they gathered people to write letters to elected officials, to local officials. They were handwritten, which in and of itself shocks me. They were written to senators, and they wanted to really address the issues of food injustices in this country. So the reason I was proud of that for you is because talk about it was, I mean, when I looked at the blog, it was like loose leaf paper. We're talking about good old fashioned grassroots community change back from, you know, days that we were hippies. It was an email campaign.
Oh yeah. That's old school.
Yeah. It's old school. And it was like, and you got people to do it. And it worked. So,
the magic of it, though, is that we didn't get them to do it. They came up with that idea as a chapter.
Yes.
And that's kind of the beauty of the franchise model, is giving them a good amount of freedom so that they can sort of express themselves creatively and make the biggest impact however they're motivated to do that. And however they think that they can make the biggest impact. So, you know, that came completely from them. I remember actually reading part of one of those letters, and I remember the language in some of them was really, you know, well written and really thoughtful and just awesome.
And you know, I so don't ever want to put anybody on the spot, but when I was doing my work, and I forgot about it because I prepare for the show, there were great quotes in it from politicians and an abolitionist that said, you may choose to look the other way, but you can never again say that you did not know. So it was about educating people, and really and truly to me, touched my heart because A, you're right, it came from them, and it helped the students that were doing it. You know, ignorance is not bliss, and really got on the front lines to fight food justice in the country and throughout the world. I thought it was great. I really did. It's that Americana kind of story. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
And somebody felt compelled enough to write a blog about it. So we're going to take another break. I promise no more surprises when we come back. But if we do, we'll recover from it, because we're not just about food recovery. I want to talk about the Food Recovery Certify program that you just launched. Everybody stay here with me. We're going to talk about food surplus to feed hungry people, not fill our landfills. Stay here with me, Ben Simon. We'll be right back.
Join us for a new Mrs. Green's World episode every Saturday at 12 noon Arizona time at MrsGreensWorld.com. All of our past shows are available as on-demand podcasts at MrsGreensWorld.com. Listen on your computer or mobile device. Connect with us on Facebook, Twitter, Pinterest, and Instagram. Mrs. Green's World is a proud member of the Dream Vision 7 and Glimmerglass Radio Networks. If you have questions about the show, write to us at info@MrsGreensWorld.com. We'd love to hear from you. More Mrs. Green's World next.
Think blue. Think beyond green. Think TDI clean diesel technology. One part of the Volkswagen Think Blue initiative, our goal of creating and encouraging eco-conscious products and behaviors. This is Mrs. Green. A car that can drive a long way should still make you want to, well, drive a long way. Volkswagen Jetta's TDI clean diesel is a high-mileage vehicle that lets you stop at the filling station less often so you can spend more time enjoying the road. See Chapman VW today for a very special offer on the 2014 Jetta TDI.
Shop the Habit Store first for your home improvement needs, appliances, and furnishings. We have daily specials, weekly red tag sales, and occasional store-wide clearance events. Join our loyalty program and keep up with the special offers through Facebook, Twitter, and our monthly newsletter. Your good deals means Habitat Tucson can build and renovate more homes for hardworking people. The Habit Store hours are Monday through Friday, 9 to 5, Saturday, 8 to 4, and you'll find us on Grant Road, just east of I-10 in Tucson, Arizona.
Welcome back, everybody. You're listening to the Mrs. Green's World Radio Network, where we don't tell you what to think. We just want you to. And we are certainly giving you lots to think about. Our topic is mission, food recovery. And our guest is Ben Simon, who is the co-founder and executive director of the Food Recovery Network, an organization which was started in 2012 with a mission to create food recovery programs on every college campus in the country. And guess what, folks? They are rapidly getting there. They're reaching out. They have 111 chapters. Ben, correct me if I'm wrong. And you'd love to get to 150 by the end of this spring semester. So an aggressive growth campaign. Agreed?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, that's big. That's really big. Okay, let's talk about the food recovery certification, because doing what you're doing wasn't enough. You had to take it up a level. So talk about this new program.
Yeah, absolutely. So as you mentioned, you know, we were sort of hard at work on our core mission, which is expanding this program throughout colleges and universities across America.
Right.
But in doing our work, we noticed how deep the issue goes beyond colleges. You know, if you look at hospitals, hotels, airports even, but, you know, a lot of restaurants and grocery stores and just all kinds of food businesses across the country.
It's massive.
It's a huge
issue. Massive.
And they're way behind where we are working with colleges and universities, and as I said, on track to hopefully get a majority of them sometime soon. So just to give you a little story, we were working with the Panda Express Chinese food restaurant on campus at University of Maryland.
Okay.
During our early days. And we had been donating the surplus food from the Panda Express. It was going great. And we were doing it for a semester or two, had really established a strong rapport with the manager there, until one day we went by to try to pick the food up. And she said, "I'm sorry, we can't donate to you anymore." And we're like, "Oh, well, why not?" And she said she actually talked to the corporate office at Panda Express, and they heard about it and said she had to shut the program down.
Wow.
Because Panda Express has a corporate national policy of not participating in any food recovery. And we had run into similar things before, similar instances where large corporate food businesses often will have policies just not participating in any food recovery.
Wow.
And my best guess for why they would do such a thing is really that they hadn't really considered it and taken a moment to sort of do a cost-benefit analysis. And so we thought about, okay, well, how could we create change there? And we thought, okay, well, we could kind of try to embarrass them publicly, you know, use more of a carrot approach, more of a stick approach.
Right, right.
Or we could use more of a positive approach, the carrot approach. And we said, you know what, let's focus on something positive. There's enough negativity already out there. Let's recognize the good guys. Let's recognize all of those food businesses across America that are going the extra mile for the environment, for hungry people in their community. And as I said, there is some self-interest involved. They're also helping their own bottom line when they participate in food recovery. But let's offer a PR incentive for them so that they can publicize, in partnership with Food Recovery Certified, the good work that they're doing. And in turn, you know, when customers see our seal of approval, they can, you know that that business is doing the right thing, and in turn, feel better about shopping there.
And they'll want to support it. They'll want to eat there. They'll want to participate. It's very interesting. It'll be interesting to have you back someday and look at the evolution of this and see what's gone on board. You know, I've had some incredible guests like this woman, Robin O'Brien, and she's got major corporations. Her issue is more about what's put in food and nutritional content, you know, GMOs. And then the Food Babe, who's another, she's like a Danny Nierenberg in another arena, talking about, you know, the health of food. And corporations, because of social media, I bet they'll be listening to you, Ben, and they'll be changing their policies. I mean, you'll gather enough market force where they'll say, oh, it's the food recovery program. We better get on board and start donating. It'll happen if it hasn't already.
Yeah, hopefully. And you know, we're off to a pretty good start. We launched the program with two founding partners, Sodexo and Bon Appetit Management Company. And
okay.
We worked with both of those on college campuses. And together with both of those and also applications that have just come to us, you know, through people hearing about us, we have about 50 locations so far across the country that are food recovery certified. And folks can check them out at foodrecoverycertified.org if you want to, you know, go online and frequent or try out one of these food businesses or restaurants that are donating their surplus food. We would love that. They would love that. But we have actually some bigger name venues on board. We actually have the corporate cafeteria for the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation.
Wow.
For example, is food recovery certified, and corporate office of Google, one of Amazon, Nordstrom, and other large locations.
Well, that had to make your day, your week, and your efforts really light up. Was there a gong? Did you ring the gong? Seriously.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, that's big.
Gotta ring the gong. It's not a good day until you ring the gong.
No, it's not every day you get Bill and Melinda Gates to pay attention. And I think it's really important. I mean, they're just doing such amazing things in general around the country. Let's talk a little bit about your structure, because you started out literally a bunch of students, had a big dream, implemented it. What about you not only have a board of directors, but you have a board of advisors. How did that all come about? And tell us the process for student organizations that might be listening, because you took it to another level.
Yeah, we have an outstanding board of directors and a fantastic board of advisors, and they kind of play different roles.
Okay.
The board of directors is more kind of a formal board that meets regularly every 2 or 3 months to sort of oversee the organization and has legal and fiscal responsibility for the organization, whereas the board of advisors is just sort of like, you know, we saw people out there and we said, you know, wow, this person has tons of expertise around food safety, for example.
Right.
How can we bring this person in and establish a relationship with them, and they can help us out by giving us advice on a regular basis. And so that's been super helpful. We were just so excited to get some of the people who inspired us in the first place to go ahead and start recovering food. Folks like Robert Egger, who's the founder of DC Central Kitchen and now the LA Kitchen, and was one of kind of the pioneers of food recovery in America initially, as well as Tristram Stewart, who's an international expert on food waste and recently gave a TED Talk about food waste. So, you know, really inspiring people.
And Dana Gunders.
Help to have them.
Yeah, Dana Gunders.
Oh, yeah.
She has been on my show, and I love her paper, the paper that the Natural Resources Defense Council actually did on. I loved it. It was called Wasted, How America is Losing Up to 40% of the Food from Farm to Fork to Landfill. And I had Dana on the show. She's been on a couple of times, but she's amazing. She loves being on the show. And it's that's a big name and a big organization making a huge difference. So you've got some really rock stars. I mean, they all, Gary Oppenheimer, are you kidding me? He's one of my heroes. Never mind CNN heroes. He's one of my heroes. The founder of Ample Harvest. And I remember when I had him on the show, he said that we could flip this around in a day if all of the organizations that waste food, and his focus, of course, I'm sure you know, is on local growers, not big local farmers, but on anybody that has a little garden, a little whatever they're growing, and they have access to sign up for his network and give to food pantries by your zip code. I mean, he's developed the grid. I love that man.
Yeah, he's doing some amazing stuff.
Yeah. So do they just mostly communicate with you? Do you have them as a group, or do you call on them if you need a certain area of expertise? How do they function? Because you have a lot of people on your board of advisors, impressive, big thinking people.
Thank you. Thank you. Yeah, I think one of the ways we were able to get them on, especially early on when, you know, we were just at, I think, maybe even one chapter or two chapters. When we first reached out to Tristram and to Robert Egger, you know, we were still very early on, and they said yes, which I think was amazing of them to do.
I do, too.
And Robert has ingrained in me this philosophy of always hold the door open for the next guy. You know, I met with him when we were just getting started. Nobody had heard of us, and I just said, hey, can I meet with you for like an hour to pick your brain about food recovery? And he gave me about 2 hours of his time. Busy CEO, and he said, you know, this is important to help the next generation along. So I really appreciated that, and that's kind of stuck with me. But I think the way we were able to get a lot of folks is by keeping the commitment relatively small.
Right.
We have avoided having any kind of quarterly meetings or annual meetings of advisors, and instead we've just reached out to them on a case-by-case basis and said, you know, hey, Tristram, we're looking at this one issue. Could you provide some advice on that?
Right, right. Great resources.
Or could you open this door for us, kind of thing?
And this, I hope this makes you laugh. Shameless plug. If you're looking someone that wakes up every day wanting to create a global community of people who care about the planet, you don't have anybody from media on there that I can see. And it would be something that would be such a match for me. I can't believe I'm shamelessly saying that to you. So it's something we might be able to schedule a follow-up conversation about. And I have said that once in 7 years to another organization, because this one, and it was another student organization, and I just feel so strongly that you are all the hope for our very great future because of what you're doing. So we can move right on from there about Mrs. Green might
really
want
nice
to be on the board of advisors. And it's just, I would be in great company, and I certainly could help in terms of, you know, actively getting the message out because of the tribe that I have built through Mrs. Green's World. So let's talk about, go ahead.
No, I just said cool. Thank you. That's really nice of you. I'd love to talk to you more about that.
Well, we will follow up. It would be a great announcement. Anyway, and when I looked at some of the people, I'm like, I know them. And you might even be one of the roles that I could play would be getting some of these guests on the show that I don't have connections with to tell their story. I mean, Gary Oppenheimer, I really think he hung the moon. He was one of my favorite guests. Of course, he's from New Jersey, and so am I. So we had to love that. And he had a little bit of a New York accent. So it was a love fest. I mean, he was really great. And I love to talk about food and food waste. But anyway, before we go off the air, I think it's important to name again your incredible social media network. And for people that are listening, it's foodrecoverynetwork.org. You have a really active, fun, interactive Facebook page. You just go to Facebook and put in Food Recovery Network. Twitter, it's the same. Food Recovery, Instagram, cool pictures on there, Food Recovery, and also a Pinterest page. You go to Pinterest.com and it's Food Recovery. Now, is there anything else in the rapidly just disappearing time we have that you would like to talk about? What do you think it's going to look like, say, a year down the road? What would you like to wave your magic wand and see for the Food Recovery Network?
Well, it's really exciting, and you know, the first step is really getting to 150 colleges
right.
By this May, which is our goal. We're right on track to hit it, but we could really use the support, actually, of all the listeners. I'd love to put a call out to the listeners. You know, if anybody is a college student or knows a college student who might be interested in starting a Food Recovery Network chapter at their college or university campus, definitely check us out online, foodrecoverynetwork.org.
And we'll put that link up.
Awesome. Check out that link. It's to our Start a Chapter page, which is on our website, very easy to find. And students can apply there to start the Food Recovery Network chapter at their campus. Application only takes maybe 5 or 10 minutes, and we work with the students one-on-one until they have successfully started their chapter. So we're really putting the call out. We'd love to get 40 or 50 new chapter applications from students in the next few weeks.
I'd love you to get that. And another part of the model, and I'm just going to find out, I'm on the President's Advisory Council for Environmental Sustainability at the University of Arizona. So we have a meeting next month. I'll bring it up there. They have student representatives, and why would they not be in? I can start by acting locally on your behalf. And the other part is... you can give a meal for $10, for actually 10 cents is what it says. I'm sorry, I'm glad I didn't make that mistake. But you can donate. Every $10 helps a chapter recover 10 meals. So I think you should mention again, you're going to get to 150 campuses. You already have donated 610,000 pounds of food. And that translates to 488,000 meals that would have ended up in the landfill. So I'm beginning to sound like a cheerleader, I think. And I better just calm down a little bit, Mrs. Green. It's really, it's pretty impressive. And I got very excited about the interview. So, and I do want to...
Ring the bell again. Ring the bell.
Ring the bell. Oh, ring the bell. I love it. I love it that you asked me to ring the bell. I want to ring the bell on every show that's as exciting as this. And I want to tell everybody a big bell ringer. Are you ready for this? The day before the Super Bowl, I'll be interviewing Jack Rowe, who's the director of the NFL Environmental Program. The program is massive, exciting, and you really will want to hear about all their efforts to reduce their carbon footprint, how they give back to the communities where the Super Bowls are located in sustainable and meaningful ways. It's just like not slam bam, thank you, Super Bowl ma'am. It's they plant trees, they donate books, they do an electronic waste collection that is, donates so much stuff. So everybody, I hope you enjoyed hearing about Ben and his team. Ben, you definitely gave lots of kudos to your team. Everybody make it a great green week. Follow us on Facebook and make sure you follow the Recovery Network. Ben, thanks for all you're doing, and we'll follow up. Make it a great green week, everybody. Thanks for being here with us.
All right, thank you so much.
Thank you so much.